Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 14th episode of the Language Meanderings podcast. My name is Jonathan, and today I have a very special guest. His name is Chris Broholm of Actual Fluency. So thank you very much for coming on the show, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So I think I can relate a lot of it to what I've seen on your blog and what you've talked about on your podcast, where you kind of, through Benny Lewis, kind of discovering what you call it, like this polyglot community, and I think you got involved maybe about 2 years ago, and you said you kind of just discovered Benny by chance and just went through all of his posts and just went through all the content and got kind of inspired. How did that work?
Yeah, exactly. I was, I don't know if you can call it a midlife crisis, but it was sort of that period after you're done with your high school and you don't really know what to do in life. Then I was just, stuck, and I just found out about the whole polyglot movement, that people were actually learning languages for fun. I mean, the idea of that was very surreal to me, because I mean, I enjoyed languages in school, but most of my peers certainly did not. And I think that was the reason that I didn't do as well as I could have, because, environment is very important when learning languages. And I really love languages like English and German, especially in the second, third, fourth grade. And as I grew a little bit older, that stuck with me. But my peers were just not liking the whole thing, and the rote learning, and it was terrible, the methods that were used. So it didn't really occur to me that people might actually have it as a hobby at all. And then, not until I learned about the polyglot movement, because of course I've heard about learn Spanish or learn Italian to go on holiday, I always thought, or go live in the country. But then here were these people who were just kind of learning it for fun, and I was like, what, this exists? And when you're just in the middle of, I was suffering from depression and I didn't know what I was going to do in life, I just thought, this seems like kind of a fun way to go. So why not explore languages? And I, like you said, I read every blog post on Benny's blog, and I got to know other bloggers, and that's how I started about 2 years ago.
Okay. And who did you start to kind of connect with first through after that initial period where like this curiosity might become a lifestyle or become a new way of learning languages?
Right. So I did something which I think is quite clever. I don't know if you'd agree, but I wanted to know how to do the things that the top polyglots were doing. And, if I say some names, I'm sure you've seen them, someone like Steve Kaufman, Luca Lampariello. I was also, I introduced to Ellen Jovin, who had a very interesting aspect, Judith Meyer, all these, everyone knows these people in the community. And I thought, how can I get, the inside secret? Because when I was starting, I was like, there's no way you just learn a language like, 15 times and that's how you become a 15 language polyglot. So there must be some kind of secret, right? And I thought, how can I find out for myself? And I thought, what if I start a language learning podcast? Because there isn't really one. Like, there was one by David Mansory, who also interviewed, actually my first interview. And he's sort of retired his show. And I thought, because he was doing it sort of erratically. So I thought, what about if I do a weekly show and I just interview polyglots and I can learn their secrets? And ironically, what I learned was there are no secrets. But it did connect me to a lot of ideas in the community. It did connect me to a lot of amazing people. And so, and also because I published the interviews, of course, people have, written to me and said, oh, I really love that interview. And so I'm sharing the passing the knowledge on. But the original idea was definitely for myself. And then, I could share it on if somebody else was interested.
Cool. Yeah, I think I've just kind of been very lucky these past few weeks where I just kind of, like a shot in the dark, just kind of, hey, what if I just tweet to a couple people? What if I just kind of comment on a couple podcasts and just reach out and see if people might respond back? The worst thing they could say is, or just ignore me. And I've just been overwhelmed by all the support and how people such as yourself, and I've reached out to, I think what first got me into this right now was, I think I saw like a webinar with Anthony Metivier and Ollie Richards. And then I said, okay, Ollie seems to know something, what's going on there. So I signed up for his course. And then I think the first thing I went to straight was some of these masterclasses that he had with Richard Simcott, Alex Rawlings, Chris Parker. And one person who I hadn't heard of was Kirsten Cable, or Kirsten Hames Cable, since she got remarried, married, sorry. So I, again, just reaching out to everybody and saying, hey, I liked what you had to say. And then that's kind of just evolved into meeting or tweeting with Lindsay, and then seeing that Lindsay talking to you. And so it's really just been this really big discovery where you'd say, okay, there might be some of these polyglots out there who might kind of what other people call showing off. And it's kind of like, they might be competitive, was my impression, that like each person wants to outdo the other one. But behind the scenes, it's just overwhelming to see, no, everybody is just so supportive. They're creating these courses. They're saying, hey, you specialize in this, can you help me out? You specialize in that, can you help me out? And it's just it just really makes me kind of so envious of everybody who's in Europe right now. And I'm like, I would just love to be in Berlin in May, and I'm in Mexico City, and I'm looking at my expenses, and I'm going like, oh, maybe I need to do a crowdfund program to like get Jonathan to polyglot gathering in Berlin or something like that. But what really I've liked about your blog and is like, there is a lot of the aspect of, okay, what are the secrets? And there's no secrets. And okay, how do you just do everything in 3 months, 2 months, a week? And I think we get kind of overwhelmed with that. And it's just, there's going to be a new book. There's going to be a new, it's like dieting or something like that, where like there's a new method every 2 weeks. But what I really, really liked was your aspect of, this is a struggle. You're going to have to put in the work. Not every day is going to be a good day, but kind of how do you pick up? How do you move on? And right now I'm in one of those rough patches. And the other day I was looking at an email I got from Brian Kwong with the Add One Challenge, and going through like the curve of like your enthusiasm over time, and then it finally just kind of really dies down. And so I'm with my Russian studies, I'm really kind of hitting a low point. But
it dips, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the reasons that I write so much about that on the blog, is because what I noticed from these other bloggers is that, and no disrespect to these other people, because they're great, and Benny did this for a long time as well, you know, where every post he would write would be very sensational and it would be incredible results. And sometimes he would mention, oh yeah, I do this, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day to achieve these results. But most of the time it was actually, you know, omitted from the videos or from the blog posts. It's only in recent times that he actually began to investigate the struggles, as well as listing, you know, guys, I do this in 3 months. Yes, that is impressive, but I also work, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. And then, you know, for me, the penny just drops and it's like, oh, okay, that's what it takes. That's the sacrifice that he's doing to get those results. It doesn't mean that, you know, 3 months is some kind of scam or unreachable target. It's just because it's hustle, you know. And for some people, you know, putting in 8 to 10 hours a day, I certainly couldn't do it. But some people can just, you know, I don't know, hustle, grind it out, and get it done.
Give me 1 second. I'm sorry. I have one of my most important listeners, my 3-year-old son, banging on the door. Let me go check on him to see, make sure that his mother can kind of keep an eye on him for 1 minute. I'm sorry for the interruption. We'll be right back for this commercial break. Just for a second. And welcome back after that commercial pause from our sponsor, my three-year-old trilingual son who wants to come in on my hangouts when he hears me talking to the people.
Of course. Yeah, that's interesting, and it's good to hear he's curious. So we were talking about struggles.
So yeah, the struggles, and you were saying that kind of Benny kind of, well, I mean, it's great to inspire people. I was listening to his interview with Kirsten and Lindsay a couple weeks ago on the Creative Language Learning podcast. And for listeners who aren't familiar with that podcast, definitely go check it out. It's a wonderful resource.
I like that too. Yeah.
And I'd say with Benny, I think he did admit to the fact that there's two sides to this whole polyglot thing, where there's like people just kind of outdoing each other and saying, oh, you're fluent in all of this. And wow, that's incredible. And he was kind of just like, I don't really want to be remembered for that. I'd rather be kind of inspiring more than just admire me or think I'm great. And I think it's important to kind of show people you have to put in the hard work. It's not going to be easy.
Right.
And as I'm listening to some of the videos with Ollie, he's saying like, okay, yeah, you'll have bad days, but in the scheme of things, if you have a couple bad days, but you're in this for the long-term project, it kind of waters down. So a bad day in 1 week is a bad day, but a bad day in 1 year is slightly insignificant. So,
yeah. I think it's just awareness that it actually happens, because if you look at some of Benny's early missions, you get all the victories, you get all the highs, but the lows are kind of censored away. So while it is inspirational, you don't know how to react to when that wall hits, so that low when it comes, because it will come. Like, you'll be very excited to go learn a language, and then a few weeks in, maybe a month or two, you're going to hit that wall where you're like, why am I doing this? You know, and it's like, I don't understand how these Russian cases work. I just don't understand it. Why do people need cases? And then you go completely insane and you're like questioning your life choices, and you just want to eat unhealthy food and I don't know, watch Netflix or something. But the point that I'm trying to make is that, first of all, that you know, the low periods will come. So by having people prepare for them, I'll say that, you know, it will happen, so don't worry about it. But also, it's not a race. You know, language learning is not a race. It's great to find ways that we can optimize the time that we put in. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not trying to learn a language in 3 months or 1 month or whatever. I mean, it's fun to challenge yourself and have let's say, like the Adwan challenge, where you have 90 days of sort of accountability. But I would really not recommend anyone to go to the idea of learning a language in 3 months, just because it's such an intense effort that for most people it would be completely unrealistic. So that's why I tried to bring out the other aspect and say, you know what, it might take me a year, it might take me 2 years to have a functional level in Russian, but you know what? That's the level I feel comfortable with. You know, I've been studying Russian for pretty much since I started the blog, and I'm still pretty bad at it. But when I turn on, you know, a Russian YouTube video and I understand, you know, the gist of things, I'm like, I haven't completely screwed up. You know, I haven't wasted 2 years, but I haven't learned it in 3 months for sure. So that's why I try to bring that aspect to the blog. Like, ultimately, my message is just, you know, take it easy. Take it in your own time, you know, for all, you know, find your method, find that, optimize the time that you do spend. But if you have to take a break of a few weeks or whatever, I don't mind. And it's certainly not a race, at least not for me.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. You did the Adwan challenge, I think, 2 years ago with Esperanto. That's true.
Yeah, that's true. I did it, and I'm a big proponent of accountability. And you know, just having that external source of accountability. I that's why I started the blog as well. You know, the of course it was to share the podcast, but the written, I didn't have to write as well, right? I could have just published the episodes and that would have been enough. But by doing a blog on top of the podcast, I had so much external accountability that I just kept going. Because you, there is a hump for sure in language learning where you need to get over that to keep going, I think. And I did the Add One Challenge, which is, I mean, the community in that is just great. I mean, they're so supportive and you have your own little language group. You know, if you're studying French, you have only French learners and, or if they can, of course. I remember there was one time they had like Icelandic and one or two people. It's pretty funny. They had their own little group. But yeah, highly recommend it if you have trouble with, you know, motivating yourself on a regular basis, which I definitely have problems with. I don't know. It's probably a common problem.
Yeah, definitely. I got really lucky a few months ago. One of my friends in Russia, she took part in on VK. There was this marathon, a language learning marathon called Language Heroes, run by Evgenia Kasheva. And my friend was studying Spanish in the summer, and she said it was kind of like a 3-month, 90-day challenge, basically. And but there. Basis was the 12-week year by Brian P. Moran, and the idea was like, well, when people try to kind of cram their year-long goals like at the last few, 3 months of the year, they say, okay, this actually ends up being when I'm the most productive. I think the premise behind the book was, well, what if you do that? What if you do those 3 months every 3 months? And this was a really interesting approach. And it also followed that same kind of curve enthusiasm that I just saw with Brian Kwong's graphic that he was using with the Add One Challenge. And I think there is some kind of, I think there is some validity to the, this approach of each week has like the symbolic value of a month, and so eventually each day really means a lot in the kind of how effective you can be with your time, and choosing kind of like also the kind of 80-20 Pareto principle of kind of focusing on where you're going to get the highest return on investment in the language study time. I'm still learning it, but but I ended up getting involved in that community. The Language Heroes, like in October to December, was the first time that they were opening it up to foreigners. So it was just this wonderful experience where I was like one English speaker or one of a few amongst about 500 Russian speakers. So I suddenly became this superstar because I was this English speaker who was reaching out and saying, hey, I'll help you with your English if you help me with my Russian. Or, hey, I see that you're studying French. I lived in Paris for 6 years. I could help you with your French as well. And I also speak English. And then so they got those people. And then, hey, I see that you're studying Spanish. I'm living in Mexico. I've been here for 7 years. I can help you with your Spanish in addition to English. So I just brought on all of these people like on board.
You had a few friend requests then.
A little bit, yeah. And then kind of like what you're talking about, the accountability, I got really inspired by Tim Doner with his TEDx talk with like he was showing all these YouTube videos that he was just kind of just going on in a foreign language and just putting it out there and just really exposing himself to. I mean, it YouTube has the potential where you're going to get some really nasty comments, but but there is if you're able to kind of open yourself up and show the vulnerability, you can kind of crowdsource your error correction or crowdsource your pronunciation correction and or crowdsource your kind of grammar. I don't know, whatever it is, like if you're willing to kind of just put it out there, there's a lot more potential for like the positive thing. So I just figured, hey, I'm going to try doing this with my Russian. And I started to kind of do it at least a couple times a week. I made some ridiculous goals to say, I'm going to do this every day. and then life got in the way, obviously. Course, I mean, yeah. I've got two kids, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. So this language stuff was kind of a hobby, and And then eventually now it's becoming like, this is going to be my thing. Thanks to my previous employer who fired me 3 weeks ago, now this is my full-time gig. I have a little bit more pressure on the plate, but it's going well so far. But my main point is the accountability and working in a group of a language community. So I'm really looking forward to seeing when the next Add One challenge starts, so I can try that one out and test out the community as well. Because I've also seen this not just with language related. A support group. A couple years ago, I did a detox program with this nutritionist here in Mexico City, and she created a Facebook support group with the people, and it was a really rough 3 weeks of we had to cut out coffee, we had to cut out sugar, we had to cut out kind of just a lot of the junk food and stuff, and all the comments people were making was like, I've got these intense migraines. I'm bending over, I'm having shivers and all the things. And I was like, wait a second. These sounds like the kind of things that you hear on a Dr. Drew celebrity rehab stuff. And I'm like, is this kind of withdrawal symptoms? And the nutritionist is like, Jonathan, you're spot on. Yeah. I mean, we're all addicted to sugar. We're all addicted to caffeine. And I was like, whoa, this is brutally difficult, but the support group aspect where like people would have an off day and they say, I can't go on with this diet, and I'm just going to give it up. And then other people say, no, you can't, because you're in this with me and I'm not going to let you fail. And then I was supporting these people and saying no, keep at it, you're doing great. And then at some point I had a bad day, and then people
exactly.
No, Jonathan, you can't have a bad day. You're the one who's been supporting all of us. And I'm like, whoa, thank you. So it kind of goes full circle sometimes with these communities. And
for sure.
And so I think the community at large of just, there's a lot of language learners out there and want to be inspired. And then these kind of leaders all. I'm realizing with the leaders that, I mean, they're not all knowing and omniscient, and
no,
everybody has off days as well. And it's like, how do you keep yourself motivated when you've got all these thousands of learners kind of depending on your feedback? And I think that's why a support community exists, where it's like, not even the people who we kind of look to for inspiration have everything figured out, because it's life. Yeah. So it's a big learning process, and I think we actually learn more from each other's failures and struggles than the successes, because a lot of times the success story, it might just be the luck of that market or that condition, or just something happened and it worked and we don't know why. But when we analyze all of the failures and the struggles, we all kind of connect at some level. All going to go through failure, all of us, no matter who it is. And I think we can all learn from that a lot more.
Yeah, for sure. And I would just add that the community in this is just so amazing. I mean, I went to the first gathering in Berlin 2 years ago, and I'd only just started my blog, and I don't think anyone knew me except the two people I'd had on the podcast already. I came there with, 2.5 languages or something like that, English, Danish, and a little bit of German. And you're just welcomed with open arms, nobody was judging. Nobody was sort of questioning why I only spoke, three languages. And so it was just an amazing feeling. And that's the feeling I'm getting from the entire community. So if anyone's, worried about, oh, I only speak English, I saw somebody who only spoke English at the gathering. He said he had a great time, so it's a great community to be part of. And also, you mentioned earlier, if you ask people for help in anything, whether it's an interview or it's how do I learn English phrasal verbs, people will be happy to help you. And that's, I really enjoy being part of this community and sort of keeping that tradition alive, because so many great people and you instantly connect with them. And, you know, that's why I would recommend going to Berlin. But of course, I mean, I know the struggles. I was just in the US for the Polygon conference, and that definitely left a bit of a mark on the wallet. So I know the cost of transatlantic.
Oh, okay. Have you spoken at any of them yet?
Yes, I had a small talk at the first gathering. I did a little presentation in Danish because they wanted more language-specific talks. And I haven't spoken since then because it was very stressful. And I also don't think it's something that should be done lightly. You know, a lot of people that I know, they'd say, "Oh, I'll just go and I'll speak about something interesting." I'm like, "That's fine," and I'm sure there are great talks and everything, but I'd like to wait until I have a really good topic and some really good data or anecdotes or whatever it's required to do a really good talk. So I haven't done it for the last two events, but I will do one for the next Berlin one. I have some plans that'll be, I think, pretty epic, because I'm getting close to 100 podcast episodes. I will be at 100 when the gathering is happening, I think. And if I'm not, I'm going to push a few extras along the way so I can get to 100. But anyway, so the point is that I think after 100 interviews with Polygods, I can really do some empiric data also. Like, what do people actually say? And I can release my findings there. So I think that'll be interesting. And then there's also the North American one, the new one that's coming in July. I might be able to go to that one in Canada, Montreal, and I might speak there, but I'll keep that topic a little secret for now.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to pry if you're still doing research and you're still.
Exactly. I haven't entirely decided. So
cool. Yeah. Maybe the one in North America would be a little bit easier for me to reach, and hopefully I'll have some more students as I'm still taking advantage of the free time, which, well, I call it investing time. Other people say, "Hey, you're just free. You're doing nothing." I'm like, I don't think it's doing nothing. I'm networking, I'm researching, I'm
of course
learning languages, but some people say, kind of like that character in Jerry Maguire, "Show me the money."
is that a family member? a very close family member?
Perhaps. Very close. Perhaps.
I see what you mean.
Yeah. You don't have to pry as well. I think you can insinuate who exactly. Shall not be named. But
I hear you.
But there is motivation. There's motivation on all the fronts to make sure that this is a successful endeavor with the podcast, which has now been about 3 weeks, and I figured I'd just go crazy with it and do it Monday to Friday. And I've been very fortunate in the past months, because I mean, if I get a little personal on kind of my situation, is I was doing full-time translation work at a big four audit firm, and I'm not a good translator. I'll just be honest. I'm a better teacher, and I mean, and my bosses, I mean, I knew them for at least 5-6 years, and they took a chance on me, and they said, like, "Well, okay, you are a language teacher, you have that background, we'll take a chance and see if maybe we can kind of turn you into a translator." And it was a struggle. There's a lot of technical documents, financial statements, marketing documents, audits, and all kinds of the technical vocabulary and things. And I understood the Spanish, and I could work on translating it in English, but there were times where it's just like, "Jonathan, I mean, did you use Google Translate on this?"
That's the worst.
Yeah, we hired you because you're an English native speaker. I'm having some doubts here. And I'm like, "Oh," I mean, I was really doing literal translations, and it was painful. It took me about 2 years to finally just like, I'm going to go back to teaching. And they put me in a performance like review or not performance review, but like an improvement plan. And that was back like in July, August. They let me know like, yeah, either you improve or goodbye. And so I saw the writing on the door, or sorry, the writing on the wall back at last summer. And I was starting to use one of these communication platforms like GoSpeaky. I was starting to get all these requests from people like, hey, like you're learning a lot of languages, you want to talk with me? And it's just keep up with just many, many requests. So I decided, hey, what if I just make a small Facebook group and just tell these people, hey, do you want to join? And at first I had to like push people like, hey, please, please come over here. But today, actually literally today, I'm going to put in the 8,000th person. Wow. And it's been growing at about like 100 people a day in the past few weeks. And
Facebook groups can go crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I don't know what I'm doing. People say like, you're a great admin. I'm like, I am. I mean, I spend most of my time in the past few weeks deleting pornography, religious posts, harassment, trolling. So at some point when it's like past 5,000, you're like, okay, I'm an admin.
Yeah. You need to get some moderators or something.
Yeah, I'm now a moderator, but because there's all these language enthusiasts around the world, I'm like, now I'm suddenly in this position where like, hey, if I say I'm going to learn this language for a week, people are like, oh, I'll help you. And I'm like, whoa, cool. Because my goal this year, I discovered Benny's Speak in a Week crash course because of the Language Heroes community on VK. And Evgenia had a kind of a promotion with Benny, and we were all these little kind of fanboys and girls with like, Benny's gonna come to our community and he's gonna chat with us for a day. And so he promoted the Speak in a Week, and that was the first time I heard of it. So I decided to do Turkish at the beginning of January. And then I figured I'm kind of old enough and I've got enough experience now that why don't I just do some crazy goal for the year? And so I'm doing a new one each week. And I mean, I've had success, I've had failure. And some weeks have been kind of just, it's been difficult to deal with life stuff, as you can imagine. But it's been like Turkish, Swedish, Swahili, Ukrainian, Indonesian, Malagasy, Quechua, Persian. Thanks to Kirsten Shumai. Kirsten, I did a little bit of Welsh, and then thanks to Lindsay and Shannon Kennedy, I'm trying to do a little bit of Korean this week. So Annyeonghaseyo. So I'm trying to kind of just go at this and get a couple hello, how are you, thank you, and using Simon's Omniglot page. But so it's a crazy goal. I'm just kind of getting myself out there. But the community has been supportive, helpful, and I'm just trying to share all these tips and trying to increase more people, language learners, to kind of get involved with a lot of community. Because I keep looking at the podcast views and I see YouTube video views, and I'm like, seriously, these people are awesome, and there's only like 20 views, and I'm like, that can't be. I mean, these people need to be like patted on the back. Somebody needs to be out there going like, come on, I just discovered this secret and it shouldn't be a secret. Come over here and take a look at this, listen to this. And
it's true. You gotta share the love, you know. You have to a lot of people come into this language learning and they see somebody like Benny and they might learn about Rosetta Stone or something like that, but to get the wide reach and really find the interesting videos and podcasts and blog posts, you really need to educate people about a wider community. So that's a really good idea.
Yeah, just even I think a few days ago, I just joined Ollie's group, and then I mentioned this to somebody. No, I think actually the post that I put in Ollie's group was mentioning all the people, these great people who I had been following in the past few weeks, and saying like I don't know if you guys realize it who are actually joining this group, but I mean Ollie says there's people in here, but he doesn't specifically say who was. And I said,
right.
Wait, I was dropping names, and then suddenly Facebook says that's a group member, and I'm like, oh my god, wait, what?
Yeah.
So I just go through the member list, and I'm like,
everyone's in there.
Why is this a free group to join? Why is this not a exclusive? You have to pay to join, kind of varsity club or something, or a fraternity club. I'm like, well, how did I just suddenly listen to Ollie's podcast? And he says, yeah, come on over, join us, and I'll add you. I'm like, seriously? And the other people were joining, looking at the poster, like, I didn't realize there was a community. Thank you. I just discovered Ollie. And I'm like, wait, you are in the community. Like,
yeah, this, you are there, yeah.
Like, you are in it. So it really puts me more in a position to kind of use the Facebook group to like really bring a lot more viewers, listeners, and readers, and saying, come on, go check out these people. Like, I'm just some schmuck saying he's going to learn a new language each week, but I'm still figuring out stuff. And I've been very, very blessed, very privileged to have a lot of people kind of say, yeah, we'll help you out, we'll share some tips with you. And so, I'm going to make sure a lot of people check out Actual Fluency, check out the blog, sign up for the newsletters. And so expect some new people signing up. But
appreciate it.
I really appreciate you coming on the show, and that kind of gives me more motivation to continue with this. Cause I think a lot of people say, okay, you can start a crazy project and then give up as easily, as quickly as it starts. But there's been some positive feedback, and then people saying, hey, I liked this interview. Tell me a little bit more about your Russian studies. So you've been doing this for about 2 years or so?
2 years, yeah. I started, and I think it has to be said that I think there's great merit in if anyone's listening out there and they are going to start this crazy polyglot journey as I've started. I think there's a really good argument for starting with something easier. And I really don't like to, you know, say, oh, this is easier than that, or this is a hard language, this is an easy language, because most people, when they say that, they'll try and disqualify a language from, you know, something you should learn or something you shouldn't learn. But the reason I say this is because Russian is really hard, like ridiculously hard. And I'm not just saying that because I'm not the best learner in the world. I'm saying that because everyone I've ever interviewed have told me the same thing. So I tried it my personal experience. And, you know, even people like Richard Simcutt, he was like, yeah, I couldn't really do Russian. I was like, what? You speak like 50 languages and 10 Slavic ones, and you gave up on Russian? I mean, yeah, I think he speaks pretty good Russian now, but that was one of the languages that he had kind of stumbled over. And I was just like, wow, I totally agree with that. So I started learning it, and it was my first self-taught language. And, you know, it's pretty hard to, because you have to learn how to learn. Mm. There's no secret to it, but you just have to learn how do you actually learn something on your own. Like, for most people, learning kind of stops when you're done with high school, college, whatever. You don't learn anything. I mean, you don't pick up a book and say, oh, I'm going to learn how to be a chess master. I'm going to learn how to bake bread. You know, most people just live their lives, you know, without picking up new skills. So when I had to learn Russian, I also had to learn to learn in general. And man, that was tough. So I get started. I'm really excited. You know, I go crazy for the first month or something. And then I'm like, oh God, this is impossible. I'm not getting anywhere. I can't say anything. And I was, you know, doubting my own ability, doubting my life choices, as you know, I talked about. And I took like, I think I took almost a month off. I was like, not doing this. I'm just not, I'm going to play video games instead. This is much easier. And so I went, that was about a month or so. And then I went to Berlin. And I was re-energized. I watched some talks about language learning and I got some new ideas. And so I went back. I did a few more months where I had the long break and then I did a little bit and then a long break again. And then I finally pulled myself together and got tutoring. So a person, I actually got a Skype tutor and that really helped. Like if I didn't, if I could say, you know, the usual touristy phrases, then getting that Skype tutor was really huge in my development. And the reason I had sort of put it off for so long was because probably because I'm slightly introverted. So I'm a little bit nervous about, you know, meeting new people and particularly in a foreign language. I mean, is there anything more terrifying than having to meet someone in a language that you only just started learning? For me, I can't think of any situation that's more sort of anxious. You know, some people just love it. I'm really anxious about it. So it took me 7 months of Russian to get a tutor. And you know what? Once I got the tutor, I improved so fast. It was ridiculous because not only did I get to speak it, my tutor was only speaking Russian. And if I didn't understand something after seven repetitions, she would say it in English. But I mean, that happened so infrequently because she could explain it in Russian. And there's just such a natural way of speaking. So that really elevated my level. And I started watching some YouTube series, or actually it's a television series called Posledny Zmatikan, which is a comedy show. And it's really funny, actually. And even if you don't understand what's going on, it's just naturally funny. You have the music and you have like the slapstick elements. And even if you don't understand it, it's pretty funny. But I started to understand like the gist of every sentence and like the plots. And I couldn't, you know, translate sentence by sentence because there would be key words that I was missing. But just the fact that after less than a year, I could watch Russian TV. And it was still hard to watch because I don't know if you tried watching a movie that you don't understand. It's actually really hard to stay interested in it. So for me, that was a huge success. And then I, you know, took some breaks again. And then I went crazy with flashcards. I had like a month on Memrise where I got, I think, 1,050 new words in a month. And wow, that was just to test cool. myself. It was good.
I'd say maladets.
Yeah, it was good. And it really helped. And the crazy thing about flashcards, and I never tried this before, honestly. The crazy thing about flashcards is they just work, right? They just work. If you repeat them enough, you will remember it. But the other crazy part is I was remembering words from flashcards that I've only seen once, like 4 weeks prior. And in the middle of a tutoring session, I would be looking for a word in my brain somewhere and suddenly it would just pop up. And I was like, how do I remember this? I only saw it once. So there's a real value in the investment that you put into flashcards, even if you only see the word once. And, you know, we don't really understand how the brain works at all, as far as I know. We just like, yeah, there's some language center somewhere, you know, some fancy Latin names and something happens there, you know, it's like input, question mark, output. You know, I don't know how it works and I don't think anyone does, but that's basically where I am now. And then I, you know, on the way, I stumbled across Esperanto, so that distracted me from Russian. And I kept taking breaks all the time because Russian is just so hard. But I did the language challenges on italki, which I can highly recommend to do more tutoring. And yeah, so I don't really know what my level is now because also you internalize things. So once you've been learning for a while and you take a break, sometimes you come back and you have a higher level than before. You can also come back and have forgotten half of the language. But most of the time I experience positive growth after a break. And then, so at the end of, when was that? Oh, yeah, last summer. Oh, my God, I've been in Hungary for a long time. But I moved to Hungary, and then suddenly it was like, well, obviously I have to learn Hungarian now because I'm here. And the sooner I can have some Hungarian, the better. So Russian has actually been on hold for, since then, pretty much. I've watched a video here and there, and you know, that, but nothing is serious really. So I would say I have a solid beginner level. I can do some conversations. I can watch some TV. I can read some news articles and stuff. And that's about it. But it's really hard. And I really would advise people, beginners who want to learn a language, I mean, try to find something that's a little bit easier in the beginning, because you need that momentum later. Because I was actually doubting halfway through my Russian, can I even learn a language? And it sounds ridiculous to say that now, but I was thinking that because I was not getting anywhere. So if you haven't learned the language before, how do you know if you're actually able to do it? Like, you can say to your brain, yeah, yeah, everyone says it's possible, Benny did it, you know, but until you've actually done it, you're just not going to believe it. So I would really recommend, if you are interested in Esperanto, for instance, that only takes a few weeks to learn. It's a huge success experience that just you can build momentum with, and also talk to a lot of interesting people and events around the world and stuff like that. But otherwise, you know, if you're an English speaker, maybe try French or Spanish or one of the other Romance languages that are quite, at least vocabulary-wise, quite connected. And just get that easy win, you know, just get going. Because my first two self-taught languages, well, I guess if you count Esperanto, but okay, let's say the first one was Russian, then I did Esperanto, and now I'm doing Hungarian, which is ridiculous as well. I mean, honestly, top two most difficult languages, that's probably a lie, but Russian and Hungarian, really difficult. So that's, I also attribute that, you know, all those breaks to the fact that it's just a really difficult language. And I know I'm saying this, it's difficult a lot, but it's really difficult, as I'm sure you know.
I commiserate with you. I started a little bit of Russian all about like 16 years ago. My dad had some books. He had some Pimsleur tapes, and I would listen to a few things, and I would just go through the books and like, okay, at the stall, at the stool, at the kniga, and I would just go through like the just very painful kind of getting familiar with Cyrillic. And then I realized like, wait, Cyrillic has Greek in it. So I taught myself Greek, the alphabet, in a day. My dad, apparently he was a Greek specialist when he was actually in a seminary. He was going to become a priest. Fortunately, he didn't. But he was a Greek specialist, and he had this New Testament, Latin and Greek. And because I'd known like some Spanish and French, I could kind of read through some of the Latin, and I was trying to get some of the Greek alphabet just so I could like learn the Russian based on knowing the Greek alphabet. So I kind of put this like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I should learn this. And then I came to him a day later, and I'm like, I'm having a hard time pronouncing this word. And he uses it as an anecdote with people. He's going like, my son is scary. He can learn the Greek alphabet in a day. And I was like, and he's like, I just gave you this book last night. I'm like, yeah, so, but can you tell me how to pronounce this? And he couldn't get over the fact of like, yeah, maybe I just picked it up. And then I haven't gone back to Greek ever since then. But I get a little bit into the Russian, and I started using ICQ. I'm not sure if you remember that platform.
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
And I just go random chats, and like somebody would send me like a whole paragraph in Cyrillic. But if you remember 16 years ago, there was no Google Translate. There weren't all these online dictionaries. I had this paper dictionary. I had my paper 501 Russian verbs book. And I was just going through this message, deciphering it. And I'd like take a half hour. And finally, it would be this like, hey, you're not responding. I got to go. Are you still there? bye. Talk to you later. And I'm like, I figured it out. I've broken the Rosetta Stone. I've figured out this message. And they've been long gone for like a half hour. I'm like, oh. So I have like those notes. I have that notebook. I can maybe scan in a few pages of my notes from like 16 years ago. But more recently, in Mexico City, I found this language school, and a friend of mine said, hey, I'm thinking about learning Russian. I'm like, seriously? And he said, yeah. And so we went. There was the school in my neighborhood, and we signed up, and we had this teacher who, a real Soviet expat, and he was not a teacher. he probably was a very strict, stern guy. And like the third lesson, my friend, unfortunately, he had a little bit of a bit of a difficult pronunciation, and the guy was just grilling him and grilling him, and my friend just flipped. He completely flipped, and he insulted the teacher, and just stormed out of the room and thought he was completely picked on. And then he went to to see the administration of the school, and he was just kind of really steaming, and the class finished. And then he just like continued insulting the teacher. I think he even attempted to kick him. And then the administration said, like, okay, that's it, get out of here. And the teacher was like, do you know this guy? I'm like,
No.
this is your friend. And I'm like, yes, but I'm not sure why he kind of got in. Like, so I kind of had to play the diplomatic, kind of like, yes, I know him, but unfortunately, I can't vouch for his behavior. But I ended up sticking with the classes for like another 2 years of the Russian
Nice.
classes, and then eventually we moved on to a different teacher, and then another teacher, and I seemed to have a like I kept going with it. And at the same time, I started learning to program web apps in JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. I'll have to send you a link. I'll put a link on the show notes here. But I developed one for Russian verb conjugations for about like 150 verbs. And then I developed one for noun and adjective declensions and all the 12 cases. And it's dynamic. And so you can kind of pick and choose and work with stuff and kind of just practice going like, okay, what is the genitive singular of old man? I'm like, okay, starova mushchin, and I'm like, wait, no, is that right? And okay, or what is the prepositional plural of big theaters? I'm like, okay, bolshich teatrov. And I'll just force myself to go through these little declensions, and they're just all dynamic, and they're keep going
Right.
like
Yeah, I found
randomly.
an app on the phone as well that does that, and it's quite helpful, but it's hard to, because there's so many exceptions, it's just really hard to, and there's so many different combinations as well. It's really hard to memorize unless you do a lot of drilling, and I don't like drilling. Like, I guess most people don't.
Yeah, I kind of just I. It was like the big, like the elephant in the room aspect of learning Russian was just all the cases, all the declensions, for just not just for the nouns, but the adjectives, and then getting used to the verbs, and then going, okay, you have the savershenny vida, the definitive aspect, and the kind of
Perfective.
perfective, sorry, perfective and imperfective aspect. And then
Yeah.
my big challenge is the verbs of motion.
Motion, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I'm
you're
just
listing all the headaches of Russian, honestly. It's just so hot, it's so tough. And I think more the toughest of all actually is just they just it's just a different mindset. When you speak Russian, you just don't have the same mindset as you speak in English. So I would constantly, when I was sitting with my tutor, I would constantly try to translate in my head from English. It just doesn't work because it's two different languages. So I would constantly be like, how do I say I have or something like that? It's like, oh, you can't say
Okay.
that. Okay. That's one step you have to get over. But then I would constantly say like something that I guess is considered maybe like metaphorical or like to have an idea, for instance. I mean, some languages don't think of it that way. So I would constantly translate from English to Russian and it just doesn't work. So I would constantly get stuck and I'd be like, how can they say this? That this doesn't make any sense. And so that's, I think that's the biggest challenge with Russian or languages that are really different from your own, is that they just have a totally different view on the world and a different, they see communication differently, like the to have example, right? I mean, as an English speaker, could you imagine not having to have? Just doesn't exist, right? So that's really for me why Russian is so difficult. It's just a different idea, and I think that when you're learning Russian, you should really try and mimic native speakers and try and not translate. It's bad to translate, but what can you do? I mean, that's what I did anyway.
Mm-hmm. So what would, I mean, you sound, you're still struggling with that learning process with the Russian. How have you had some kind of milestones, some breakthroughs where you'd say, oh, I finally got this?
I think just the relentless tutoring and just having that feedback all the time. And, you know, if I recorded some of my lessons, and the early lessons, you know, I was speaking really slowly, I was speaking really incorrectly. And, you know, 20 lessons later, I can have pretty normal conversations with my tutor about everyday things. And if I made, let's say, 300 mistakes in the first hour I did with her, then now I'm down to maybe 180, you know. Okay. So the progress is somewhat measurable, but that would just be the, I think that's what I would be looking at. And just the idea that I could have 1 hour conversations entirely in Russian was a really big victory for me. There weren't in-depth conversations or anything, but, you know, we'd talk about some pretty complicated stuff because I'm stupid. And instead of just talking about the weather, I would be talking about like women's rights and politics. And she would always try to help me talk about what I talked about. So, and I went into some really long-winded discussions. And I think that's one of the other breakthroughs you can get to in a language. When you start to explain in the language, instead of just saying the English word, you're actually trying to say, so instead of saying, I don't know, chimney, you can say the one that you put, that smoke comes out of or something, you know, where you talk about the language in the language is a really big milestone. Or just asking in the language, how do you say this? Or essentially never using English. If you can avoid using English, I think you've made it really far.
Yeah, I think I do that. I still do that with my Spanish, where that person who needs to make sure that the bills get paid tells me like just say it, and I'm like that thing that you use to and I'm explaining it in Spanish, and I just sound completely incoherent after 20 years of Spanish and living in Mexico for 7 years, but it's still like this. I forgot that word. Please have some mercy on me. I'm not like. I don't know the entire language after all these years, but it's like, or I have some stupid things like I'll use like, can you hand me the filter because I got some spaghetti here? And they're like, that's not a filter.
Right.
You need a colander. And I'm like, oh yeah, the coladera, it's not a filtro. And I'm like, oh, okay. Right. And then you're like, it's an honest mistake. I mean, they're similar, they're related, but it's like, no, you lack vocabulary, but,
Well, I think that you bring a good point here is that sometimes people are more hard on themselves for mistakes they make in a foreign language than actually native speakers would do the same. Like in English, for instance, if you hear a native speaker who forgot some word, which does happen. I mean, I forget my native language sometimes. I would have to explain it that way because you're looking for a word in the language and you forgot the word. So you'd explain about it in your native language. And suddenly, because it's a foreign language, you're like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. And it's strange that we have it this way, but we're just really hard on ourselves when it comes to foreign languages and also making mistakes. You know, native speakers make mistakes all the time, particularly in English. And nobody gives a crap about it. But if a non-native speaker makes a mistake, they're like all over it. It's like, well, why are you making such a stupid mistake? So that's one good tip for beginners is like, you know, don't worry so much about making mistakes or that you forget a word. Or I think it was it Pimsleur or Michel Thomas who said like, don't worry about it. Don't try to remember, you know, the memory works better if it's just doing its thing and not if force fed. And I think that's why they figured out the whole cramming doesn't really work. Like you can cram for a test short term, like for the next day or the day after. But most people forget what they cram in, you know, a week or so. But if you use spaced repetition, it will stick because you have that forgetting curve. You know, you keep reducing the time or you keep increasing the time between each repetition.
That sounds similar to like the gold list method where like, I forget the guy
David
who
James.
And he was
one
saying
of the
something
funniest
like,
guys in the world.
Yeah, I think he imitates a Russian accent. Although
he's
British.
He's from England, but he's lived in Russia, I believe, or he's definitely worked there at some point, and now he lives in Poland. But he has a character called Viktor Huliganov, so he's doing this very strong mock Russian accent, but he does speak the language, and he's just the funniest guy you'll ever meet. So he invented the goalless method, which is really I thought it was just a spaced repetition list system where you just write down lists, but apparently it's a little bit more elaborate. Like, it takes the theory that we humans are really working on a 2-week cycle, because that was the old hunting cycle. You know, you'd have moonlight for 2 weeks, and then you'd have 2 weeks of darkness. So our minds would be really remembering a lot of things in that period, because if you didn't remember it, you'd get killed by a, I don't know, saber tooth or something afterwards. So our minds were really alert to learning in that period, and that's why he calls it the fermentation. Is it fermentation?
Or distillation? I think
That's when you reduce it. The time between distillations is 2 weeks in the goalless method, and it really works. So if you write down 25 words of vocabulary, it could be sentences as well, but I think it works better with single entries. But you can have as many entries as you want. 25 words, and then 2 weeks later, you go back to the 25, and you mark off everything you know. And the things you forgot, you add them to a new list, which would then be generally about 10 or something. About 16, I guess. So you'll take about... you remember about a third every time, so you'll take two-thirds. Yeah, exactly. And then you have that smaller list, and then 2 weeks later you distill that again, and you distill it again, and eventually you're going to hopefully have nothing left. But it's going to take some time, of course. But the idea is that for every time you do four, you're going to have only a few left, and you add those to a whole new 25-word list together with the next 25, so to speak. So it's a good method, but it depends on what type of person you are. For me personally, I'm kind of the, I don't know if you can call it, definitely not millennial. I don't know what I'm called anyway, but I'm just old enough to where we never use our hands to write anything.
I definitely think like the benefit of this method, the goalless, I think what he was emphasizing was muscle memory of writing actually. And yeah, I completely agree or relate that like we do so much typing now, and like I am a few years older than you. You're turning 28 at the end of the month. I'll be 35 in May. And My parents still have an anecdote when I was like in primary school, like kindergarten or preschool. They said, like, the teacher said something like, Jonathan did all these Valentine's cards on the typewriter, but he can't hold the pen.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's kind of my problem. That's why the goalless method isn't, I don't enjoy it. And I think if there's one key takeaway from learning languages, it's like, do something you enjoy. Mm-hmm. Like, that should be like a catchphrase. And it's funny, you talked about, you know, looking up Cyrillics with a paper, dictionary or whatever book you had, and you really enjoyed that, because otherwise how are you going to sit for half an hour to decode 50 letters, you know? So that's something that I really just figured out, that it's not about efficiency. It's not about the so-called the fastest method or the best method. It's about what appeals to you. And one of my friends called Robin, he's crazy. Well, let's just put it that way. I mean, he just learned French in a year to like C1 plus level. It was completely crazy. Wow. Yeah. And I was like, dude, how do you do this? And he was like, well, I don't know. I just put on some stuff on the TV, and then I just read the subtitles and stuff. I was like, okay, that sounds super boring for me, but if you enjoy it, whatever. How long do you do this? And he's like, well, I don't know. I can do it like 6 hours in a row, no problem. I was like, what? So I dug into it, and he said one of the ways that he was learning, I forget what language it was, might have been like Italian or something. He said he would get the Harry Potter book, the first one, and he didn't know much in the language. He'd pretty much only just started, and he had a paper dictionary to help him, and he just read the Harry Potter books. And can you imagine how long it takes to look up a word? And you'd probably be looking up words in every sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it took me 10, 20 minutes, 30 minutes per page. And I was like, that's crazy. And he was like, I could do that all day because I just enjoyed it. So that was, for me, a really aha moment that the reason that he learned languages so fast and efficiently was not because of he found some kind of miracle method or, you know, use some kind of computer software that really boosts your memory or whatever. He just found what he enjoyed doing because then he could do it all the time. Like, I don't know if you enjoy doing flashcards, but for me, I can only do like 15, 20 minutes at a time. Then I get so bored that I have to shut it down. Some people can do 8 hours of flashcards a day and they would keep going if they didn't have a family to support, you know. So it's about finding your tool that you can do all the time, because at the end of the day, it's not about how many months you learn languages, it's about how many hours, really. Because if you learn languages for 3 months, you might use way less or way more hours than somebody like me or Benny or whatever. You know, we'll get to the same point, you know, 3 months in. But because you spend 2 hours more per day, you'll speak the language much better. And it doesn't matter that your method is so-called inefficient if you could do 10 times the learning with it. So, you know, you see where I'm going with this, that if I could do flashcards for 10 hours a day, I could be really fluent really fast because I could just flashcard whole sentences. But there's no way. I mean, how do you do that? You do that once maybe, and then you'd never want to see a flashcard in your life again, which is not a good idea. So if there's anything I've learned, is to find whatever makes you tick in language learning and keep doing it. That's the key, I think.
I'm thinking that I got crazy ideas with this, all this stuff too. And I'm thinking of maybe indirectly using you as a guinea pig to see if I can test something out. But more recently, I've been coming across stuff with like the personalized content. And one of my issues sometimes with the memorized course is like, yeah, I can do like try to cram stuff in for like 10 words in like the first 10 minutes. So like, okay, here's the first 10 words of this language that I've never studied before. And I'm like, I'm not connecting with it. I'm just taking it like an injection needle and like inserting this language in my head. And it's like, it's not sticking. And one thing I just saw in one of Ollie's videos was saying like, you need to learn these like in sentences, and the sentences will kind of help it stick a little bit more than just individual words. And then I'd say on top of that, it's not just sentences, it's personalized sentences. So, I was trying to develop this idea with one of my contacts who's going to go visit France a few months ago, but unfortunately he didn't kind of continue with it. But the idea was, I told him like, okay, just tell me everything there is about you, just all your interests, your habits, and people that are like in around you. Tell me about those people in your native language, which happened to be English. And I said, okay, I'm going to translate all this stuff into French and teach it to you. And there was actually some surprising results of like, there was no issues with comprehension because it was all readily accessible information. And so what I'm going to use you for as a guinea pig, I'm going to throw a lot of your newsletters and blog entries and give those out to like my friends in the Russian speaking community. And perhaps also some of the ones who speak Hungarian, and see, hey, what would happen if you got some free translation work of this material? It's about you.
It's interesting.
Your interest. It's your interest. It's your words. And you just wrote it naturally, and then it comes back to you naturally. And let's say somebody could record it as well. And like, what would be the effect of if somebody had their own content that they were blogging, that they were talking about on podcasts, that they were talking about in videos? What if somebody was collecting that kind of data and just translated it, repackaged it,
right,
gave it back to you as a lesson content and audio content, and said, hey, here is your life in Russian. Would it be
an effective? That's pretty funny, yeah. That's a very interesting idea. I'd love to see where you go with that, because it sounds like that could be really interesting, because one of the things that I also learned in the last 2 years is most of the sentences you find in guidebooks or in beginner language courses are completely useless. And in fact, one of the recent interviews I did was with a guy called Amir from Kazakhstan, and he said, I go through Asimil, and I was like, okay, I like Asimil, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And he said, and I'd probably delete about half of the sentences because I could never imagine myself speaking them ever. And I was like, that's actually pretty clever to do that kind of filtering. Because I did some PIMSLA, and in one of the PIMSLA lessons, it's like, you, your wife, and your two kids are in a hotel room. And it's like, yeah, I don't have a wife or one kid, you know, how can I imagine having a wife and two kids? What the sentences that I'm going to be using are just completely useless. The vocabulary is useless for me usually. So it make much more sense to learn basically what what I'm saying already. So if somebody went around, or if I wore a microphone all day and somebody wrote down all the sentences that I spoke and then translated them, you know, that would be the exact vocabulary that I use and therefore 100% relevant. So yeah, very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
Cool. Yeah. I'll make my connections. I'll let my people know that you're interested. And another thing that I enjoyed when I was teaching myself Hungarian for like 6 months, because I visited Budapest for like about like 2-3 days. And I just figured, like, okay, people say, hey, they speak English over there. And I'm like, I doubt that. So I gave myself like 6 months to study Hungarian. And I found this really nice podcast called Let's Learn Hungarian. So if George and Steven are listening, hi, or Sia, or Siestok. So they gave me a lot of good feedback on that. And when I did get to Budapest, it was really necessary to be able to order food. There was a really crazy situation where we went and, cause we were kind of just hopping, from Vienna to Budapest, to Bratislava, to Krakow and then Prague. We had the hotels in place, but we didn't have the transportation. Right. So I had to get my train tickets in German in Vienna. And then I had to get bus tickets in Budapest to get to Bratislava. Right. And this travel agency, they didn't speak any English. No. They didn't speak any Spanish, no German, nothing. And it was so crazy because they had to like get all my personal data just to give me tickets. And right. And we were looking at this woman who was buying like an airplane. And because the banking system, the ATMs and all this was like really not very well developed. I don't know if it's evolved in the last 7 or 8 years, but this woman was buying these airplane tickets with this huge stack of bills. And we were like, this is a crazy system going on here. And they were asking, how old I am and how old is she? And I was just having to go like, edge, kette, harm nej, okay. Nej, key lens. It's like going through all these numbers because I couldn't do 100. I couldn't do 20. I couldn't do 1,981 for my age. I had to just go like edge, and just going through like individual numbers, it was impossible. So, but trying to get my Hungarian at the same time as learning Czech and Polish at the same time, was I took subtitles from the Friends TV show, and I took all the text that was in the subtitles, I put them into Excel, and I put them as columns. And because of the timestamps, I could have what was going on in the dialogue. And then I put the Hungarian, the Czech, the Polish. And so this would be kind of trilingual translation of the same dialogue. So I'd say, oh, well, Monica said to Chandler and then said something back to Rachel. And I, because I had all these 10 seasons on DVD and I was watching all the time, I could remember that episode and I go like, oh, I know what they're talking about here. And then I'd see the translation across the rows of this expression in Hungarian equals this expression in Czech, which equals this expression in Polish. So I could get like three languages in one full swing. Okay, there's my sponsor again. I think it's going to be time for us to wrap up this conversation. But long story short, I think there's a lot of interesting methods that are out there for learning languages, and they're still being developed. Like, not everybody has the keys.
We don't know. Like I said, we don't know how the brain works, and we don't know what the most efficient way to learn languages is right now. And the only thing you can do as a learner is just try everything. And that's also what I do a lot of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like the market is so saturated, and I think I remember listening to you and Lindsay a couple of weeks ago when she was promoting the successful self-study course, and you guys were talking about like sponsorships and affiliate and whether you promote a product or not or test it, and it just like the market is just so many apps that are out there, and I think there's so many people who just want to make a quick buck.
I hate apps. I think I said in that episode too, I just hate apps. Like, there's so few apps that are actually worth spending more than 5 minutes in, and people constantly try to make new apps, and just because they see the language craze and they see Duolingo being so successful. But the thing is, if you can't innovate, don't create. That's my kind of motto, is like, don't make a new flashcard app, for God's sake, please don't. Like, just find, if you want to make an app, be really creative, develop a new style or new method or new content, whatever. But don't try to send me an email that says like, oh, we had this new app for learning Spanish and it's called like Flash Words. And I'm like, so what do you offer that Memrise doesn't, for instance? They're like, nothing. I'm like, okay, well, you know, why did you spend all this time making it?
So I think I have a crazy idea, and it would be, what if like you, me, a lot of these of us like learning these languages, what if we brainstormed an app?
But I just don't think there's a need for it personally. Unless you have some kind of idea right now where you say, I think this is missing, I would just say you've got all the tools and you've got all the information. You've got all you need to learn languages. If you come up with some great idea, I'd happy to get behind it if I agree with it. But, you know, I just think that we have the tools basically right now to learn languages really well. And I can't imagine right now what app that I would be missing, because we already have so many apps on our phones. So if you're sitting in the bus or in the train or something like that, and you have to decide, okay, I'm going to learn some languages. Am I going to go for my Duolingo app? Am I going to go for my Innovative Language Podcast app? Am I going to go for my Memrise or Duolingo, whatever? I just don't see what app we are missing. But I guess I'm not being very ambitious or visionary about this. But, you know, if you have an idea, I'd love to hear it. But, you know, getting together to find an idea, I think that indicates that we probably don't need any new apps right now.
Okay, I think I'll think about it. But yeah, well, I think, yeah. I'll see how this experience goes. If you're willing to try out the idea of how does it help you, if you were able to use your content and somebody translated it for you in a natural way, not just literal translation, but like filtering what you've said and then kind of like kind of empirical data of like, okay, like doing kind of word clouds, I guess, is another thing of taking frequent words that you would say on a regular basis or frequent collocations that you say on a frequent basis and realizing like, okay, these are some key phrases you say on a regular basis. What if you actually learned these? And what if you kind of built up some kind of analytics where it was, okay, some typical phrases that you say in English or some other language are kind of based on this. What if there was some kind of analysis going on of your speaking patterns and translations and then audio with that? And kind of, I guess there's some room out there, but yeah, the market is saturated, but I guess,
I mean, well, there's always room for great ideas and great companies, but you know, unless you can imagine what's missing, then I feel it's pretty hard to develop something new. And I like the idea that you have. To me, it sounds more like a service though than an app. So you can use your service and you get your product, whatever, how many sentences or words, and then you get it in a memorized course or in an Anki deck or something. So you can use an existing tool to learn what you've produced, but you can automate some of it, I guess. If I gave you permission to load my Facebook profile and it took all my status updates, then you could sort of, that would be a faster way of doing it, but you'd still have to have some kind of human touch where every single thing is translated to high quality. So, you know, to me, it's a very interesting concept, but I don't see any sort of apps or web software there.
Yeah, I like what you're saying as like a service. So that could be an interesting opportunity to like personalize something. Yeah. I think I was mentioning this to one person. They were saying like, yeah, there's business travelers out there who have to kind of end up in some city on the other side of the globe in a week or two. And hey, what if there was a service for that? So
yeah,
maybe, yeah. If you're listening to this podcast and it's global, please don't steal my ideas. allow me to develop them and try them out. But if they inspire people, then that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you should just say if anyone's interested in having this developed for them, you know, send an email to to yourself.
Okay. So if you are interested in this service being developed and you are interested in testing this out, if you would like to have your content personalized and translated and perhaps even recorded for you to learn a language as a kind of accelerated learning method, feel free to contact me. That's Jonathan at HugginsInternational@gmail.com. That's HUGGINS International. Or you can visit my website, HugginsInternational.com. If people are interested in getting in contact with you, Chris, how can they contact you?
Actual Fluency on Twitter, I think, is a very good way. And actualfluency.com, of course. And actually, just search for Actual Fluency. I think it's the best. Love to hear from people. And I've got a nice little email club going where I send out some nice tips and tricks once in a while. And love to see people on the inside.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been a real pleasure getting a chance to talk with you and kind of talk shop and see what's been motivating for you, struggles, and kind of just, it's been a pleasure. So I look forward to.
Thank you so much. It's a good pleasure for me. And this is a topic I could talk about for hours. So always happy to exchange ideas and observations.
Likewise. So we'll be in touch. And so thank you everybody for listening to this this episode. I think this is one of the longest, but again, when you find the right people that you enjoy talking to and they're passionate about what they talk about, you can just keep going on for hours. So join the polyglot community, reach out to people who inspire you, and just keep learning. So
exactly, good one.
Cool. So on that note, we'll say siastok, and we'll say paka, and how would we say goodbye in Danish?
Formel.
Okay. And thank you.
Thank you.